Hello, and welcome to the Percussive Maintenance Podcast. According to the Urban Dictionary, percussive maintenance is defined as the fine art of whacking the crap out of an electronic device to get it to work again. Now you may laugh, but we've all been there before. After our first episode with John Ruggieri, I had some people ask, why did you choose the name Percussive Maintenance? Well, the truth is, my boss told me I couldn't use cuss words on the podcast. So I looked him in the eye and told him, well, yes I can. Say it with me now. Percussive. In today's society, even small wins matter. This podcast, hosted by Herb Warple, Editor-in-Chief of Engineered Systems, that's me, was designed to give consulting and specifying engineers and or facility managers the information they need to refrain from kicking the shit out of their equipment. In this episode, we welcome in Rhonda Scarf, a professional speaker, trainer, consultant, and author. Rhonda's latest book, titled Alexa is Stealing Your Job, The Impact of Artificial Intelligence on Your Future, takes readers on a guided tour of where the world has been with artificial intelligence and how it will impact our lives and careers. Well, Rhonda, welcome to the podcast. Please introduce yourself to our listeners.
Hi, my name is Rhonda Scarf. I'm a professional speaker, trainer, and author, and I specialize in people power, making people more efficient in what they do every day with their job.
Great. So I received an email from your publicist that said, I'm writing to inform you of a technological threat and share how you can use it to give yourself a promotion. Now, Rhonda, I receive hundreds of pitches every week, but this one seemed to stick with me. So what exactly is this technological threat, and how can listeners use it to gain a promotion?
All right, well, pretty good. AI, or artificial intelligence, is really here to make our life better, the very same way the Industrial Revolution did. At that time, people were afraid of computers, and they were afraid of automation. They were afraid they were going to get rid of all kinds of jobs. You know, the whole scare tactics were going on back then as well. And it did get rid of jobs, but it got rid of low-level manual jobs. Like the factory jobs that used to exist in the 50s and 60s, you know, where people stood on the line, they don't exist. The manual life of when I was growing up in the 70s is gone. So when my dad, who was 76, when he was in school, it was all about getting a trade, working with your hands, and, you know, making stuff. When I was in school, or in my mid-50s, it was all about profession and education. And when you think about kids today, they're told right out of the gate to get a specialty that requires a higher level of thinking. So these thinking jobs are paid better. And one can assume that with more money, life is a little bit better, and, you know, it's business is a little more consistent. And so what we can do is really use this threat that so many people are afraid of and jump in the water early, the same way lots of people got rich and successful in the dot-com era. You know, people were all afraid of it. And so anytime there's a technical change or a technological change, people get all panicky about it. Like, if you remember, I don't know, some people will remember when the banks implemented ATMs. And the whole world thought, oh, my God, we're trying to get rid of bank tellers. And everybody was worried that no more banking jobs would exist. And while it did get rid of the low-level banking jobs, today there are more bank tellers than ever. Why? Because it's now cheaper to open a branch, and there are more branches everywhere. We don't need people to count money. We have machines to do that. Mm-hmm. We have specialty people in the bank, so they're operating at a higher level. So the threat is the fear that everyone is about is worried about, and the opportunity to get a promotion is to look a little ahead of the curve and say, okay, how can I get there first? How can I get there? What will they need? What can I specialize in so that I'm jumping on the bandwagon early enough that I'm not going to get caught and I'm really going to maximize this amazing timing that we have right now?
So you sort of jumped ahead of this yourself. You recently wrote a book on it, in fact. It's called Alexa is Stealing It's called Alexa is Stealing Your Job, The Impact of Artificial Intelligence on Your Future. So, Rhonda, tell us where you got this idea from and how you nurtured it into a book.
So I'm a speaker and trainer and consultant, and basically what I do is I help everyone get more efficient at what they do. And there was a ton of fear about artificial intelligence. And I'd have all kinds of people saying, well, should I even bother to learn? I'm going to be out of a job in a couple of years. And I'm like, no, stop that. I mean, that's just crazy. And so, I mean, I saw that happen back in the 80s with the computer revolution, you know, and that's when I moved into the speaking and training world. And I actually trained people way back when. And they were so convinced that computers were a farce that they wouldn't learn them. They said, I don't need need to. I'm just not going to do this job. And of course, you know, obviously it's not a farce. And I feel the same way about artificial intelligence. I think where it comes from is fear. So yeah, the title is a little scary, Alexa stealing your job. But I don't come at it from you're going to lose your job. No, if you don't do anything, you will. But it really is about embracing and jumping on the bandwagon early and taking advantage of where we are clearly going. So this book is kind of your path, your roadmap, if you will, on how to get from where we are now to the other side successfully.
Okay, and digging a little deeper into that roadmap, you reference 5 undeniable truths about AI in the workplace in your book. Can you share a little bit about those and maybe extrapolate a little on that, on those?
Sure. So the first undeniable truth is that your job may be at risk, and I think that that's 100% valid. In 2013, which you know was quite a while ago, Oxford University said that 47% of U.S. jobs are going to be automated by 2033. Now, since that point, the numbers have gone down. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development said it was 9%. McKinsey said it was at 5%. But it keeps going down. But the reality is there are 60% of jobs that exist in the United States that are going to have a minimal impact of 30% of the job. So what you do is at risk if you don't change. If you keep on doing what you've always done, you're going to be out of a job. So you don't necessarily have to lose everything that you know, but you have to be flexible. So that's the first double truth, is there's change in the air, and don't look the other way, because you'll lose your job if you do. The second one is that part of the things that's going to happen is job responsibilities are going to change. So we need to readapt to remain competitive. We need to be less about routine and more about fusion. And fusion is the combination between the human brain and the artificial intelligence, you know, automation. And so we need to work with artificial intelligence, and that's where our job is going to change. So AI will be doing a lot of the work. We've got to be doing a lot of the thinking and the thinking ahead. So how you do your job is going to change. Companies are going to change. I mean, we've seen that when you look at the original Fortune 500, there's only a handful of them left. And so companies that refuse to adapt are going to be in trouble. Like we've seen that in the past with Kodak, and we've seen that with Blockbuster. And if you look at what's right around the corner, like Amazon Go is a perfect example where you do your groceries either online or you go into the store and there's no more cashiers, there's no more anything. You just take the stuff and put it in your bag. And as you walk away, it will automatically charge you. Or they even already have fridges now that notice when your milk is getting low, and it can automatically order it for you. So companies that don't adapt to that are going to disappear. So traditional grocery stores are going to be in trouble. A traditional cable is already in trouble. I don't know that the Maytag repairman has a job anymore. You know, like all of those, that we have to adapt with the technology as well. The fourth one is about reinventing yourself. Now, it's about not starting all over again, but it's moving away from task completion, like doing, you know, the checklist, the to-do list going done, 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 to more about problem solving, communication, listening, interpretation. So more about the relationship-based. We've, in sort of the last bunch of years, we've become very, very focused on how much can you get done, how much work can you get done, and however many hours you do. And it's very, very task-focused. And we already know that anything that you can do more than once, AI can do. So we need to be thinking about what else we do in combination with tasks, because that task is going to disappear. And then, of course, that leads to the fifth undeniable truth, that human skills are absolutely going to be far more valued than they ever have been in the past. I mean, soft skills have always kind of gotten a little, you know, bit of a bad rap. But in the future, it's your ability to focus on problem solving and to learn from the machine. So as machines start to learn, we need to learn from them and be a step ahead of them. And all of that is going to allow you to move forward. But you can't ignore any of those, or they're going to cost you your job.
Speaking of cost you your job, when it comes to the mechanical comfort industry, which jobs and business sectors do you feel are the most and perhaps least likely to be taken over by AI?
Well, the good news is that according to Oxford University, they say that engineering and science professions, which I'm pretty sure mechanical comfort falls into to a certain degree, are the least threatened by AI. Wonderful. As a matter of fact, most studies say that engineers are going to get the most benefit from AI. So in the mechanical comfort industry, you can see that the roles such as the repair technician, the maintenance professional, and the customer service professionals, they're going to feel that impact sooner rather than later. We already see, you know, the smart thermostats and the smart programs coming in. And then the designers after that. So we know that machine learning and AI are going to replace jobs like that. But those jobs are going to open up new capabilities, and so new industries and new jobs in the industry that aren't even on the radar yet. So the low value and meaningless jobs that are, again, just very repetitious and the same thing over and over again are going to get automated, and that's going to allow people to create even better systems than we have now. So with the AI trend and everything, it really... AI eliminates the need for constant oversight during production, and it gives your team, your engineers and your designers, the ability to create and not worry about, you know, writing the code per se, because AI will be able to do that. So I think it becomes, for the mechanical comfort industry, it becomes a lot more creative about what they can do. Like, for instance, if you take, I mean, there's a lot of AI in the industry already. So there are systems that exist that they can tell by your routine what time you get up, so that it naturally knows, like when you're waking up out of bed and it warms up or cools down your house, they know how many people are there. Like, they can find the heat maps of where the people are, and they can change the airflow based in the room. So if you have a big, let's say, an open floor plan home, and everybody's in the kitchen, it knows all the heat maps are there, right? So it's able to direct the cooler air to the kitchen and not cool down the whole main floor. So all of that already exists. And so if you think about the jobs that are going to continue to grow, are those that will even do that even better. So it's pretty exciting, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's look at the timeline for AI. As an engineer, when should I start making significant investments in AI? If I haven't already, am I behind?
Yeah. If you haven't already, you are behind. So when you and I'd like to think that as an engineer, you know, you're already, you know, you're not behind. So there is a prediction that mechanical engineers is going to grow from where it already is, from 4 to 13%. So it is one of the biggest areas in the next 10 years. And that means that we have to be able to get, you know, going now, or you will be behind the eight ball. You've got these kids in university, you've got these young people that are all over AI, and although I'm not a young people, are all over AI and get excited about it, and you don't want to be behind the eight ball. So you need to open up. The fact you're listening to the podcast is a really good start, right? And the fact
right.
that you're thinking, oh my gosh, I never even thought about that it could do this automatically. That I mean, we know in our head that it can do this. Like when you take smart programmable thermostats, like over 40% of the population have them. They just don't use them.
Sure.
So if your listeners have your smart technology and you're not using them, you know, figure it out. That's the stuff that goes first, because that's the stuff that already exists. We're going to grow from there.
So is that the first piece of equipment I should purchase, would be a thermostat?
Yeah. Well, seriously, I think you should already have one, right? But yeah, you should get your programmable thermostat. You should. I always recommend to people that you outfit your house first. So think about who your end user clients are and make sure that you know more than they do. The last thing you want is somebody to call you up and say, okay, I've got this thermostat and I want it connected to my phone and I want it connected to my car and I want it connected. And you're like, what? So yeah, get the thermostat, get your smart speaker, whether it's Alexa or Hey Google or whichever, like I'm not, you know, I don't sell any of them. Get the automatic plugs that you can understand and start to maximize the automation in your own home. And so if your house isn't kicked out, you need to figure that out first, because that's where your consumer is going to go first. And then your brain starts to go from there. You think, well, if I can have it affect the airflow in my house, my goodness, it must be able to cook automatically for me. How can I get my oven hooked up? You know, that kind of stuff. Your brain just starts to fly when you realize the possibilities.
Sure. And in the commercial market too, so how should specifying and consulting engineers or facility managers specifically use a growing roster of AI equipment to reimagine, say, the offices or the classrooms or the healthcare facilities that they're designing?
Well, certainly the connectivity of everything is really, really important. So every single technical piece you put in, whether it's an office, a classroom, or a facility, you've got to think, how is this going to tie into the whole system? So you want everything connected. You want to have room for tons of expansion because we can't even imagine what we need. You know, when you think about when internet first came out, you know, we used to use the dial-up and you used your phone and everybody thought that was a cat's pajamas. Well, then, of course, we didn't have the houses, we didn't have the communities, we didn't have anything wired for it, and they had to back do it. And I remember I built a house way back when, and my builder was like, well, do you want your house to be a smart home? And my brain went, wow, yeah. And then everybody around me was like, why would you do that? Why would you spend the money on that? Why wouldn't you? So when you're, I'm excited about this stuff, though, but when you're designing the office, the classrooms and the healthcare, you have to think like 10x what we're doing now. So if we need one plug, honestly, in 2 or 3 years, we're going to need 10 or whatever plugs are called. Also recognize that as we move to the future, we're moving much more to a virtual class, a virtual office, virtual healthcare facility. So even more so, I mean, statistically they say by the year 2025, which is seriously right around the corner, 50% of people will be working virtually. So you can be working in the suburbs of Chicago when your head office is in Geneva, or you can be talking to your doctor at the Mayo Clinic and you're not even, you know, anywhere near that. So when we're designing those things, we have to look at, like, they can do surgery like that at some point, you know, like there's so many things that we can do. So 10x, whatever your brain says.
So in the notes for your book, you insist that firms should focus their futures on humans plus machines, not humans or machines. What exactly do you mean by that?
So I don't mean either or. So I don't think that the future is going to have 100% machine automation. So let's assume we use your grocery store. While you may not see people in the grocery store stocking shelves or scanning groceries or whatever, there are going to be people behind the scenes. So it's not going to be completely automated. And I also don't believe that, even to this day, it's not going to be completely human-based. So I think we need to do that fusion, which is a mix of human and machine talents. So take what the machine learns and build on it. And so the machines will take over what's predictable and well understood, and then we take it from there. So not a reliance just on human brain and not a reliance just on machine brain. We both benefit each other.
Right, so you need to capitalize on the human skill set as well as the skill set of the machines.
Exactly. Like, the machine can only learn from us. So it can only learn up until we stop learning. So we have to keep learning so that it can continue to do more.
And AI extends beyond the build design process, right? I mean, it can be used to engage and keep customers as well.
Absolutely. I mean, you see that now a lot. If you're on the computer and you're working, pretty much chatting with any chatbot, the odds are it's not real. It's learned how to have conversation, and they're learning things like how, I know that Alexa just put out some information, Amazon Echo put out some information that it's learning when you're frustrated and how to handle it. So the odds are if you're having some online chat or even on the telephone with someone, the odds are it's not real. And so there is a lot of that now where we can, again, save the computers to do that stuff that's very predictable. Let's say somebody wants to pay their bill or they want to log in that they need a maintenance checkup. They can do all that with an automated chatbot or an automated system. And then when things start to get complicated, then you move it to the people where we need that empathy, where we need that emotional intelligence, and we need things that the computers just haven't learned that yet.
Great. Well, Rhonda, we've touched on quite a bit, but is there anything else worth mentioning about AI that you'd like to discuss?
Well, you know what? There's just, I think the biggest thing that I see is fear. And I try to really convince people that don't be afraid of it. Like, I have this conversation every day with my clients, right? And I have a lot of people who've really dug in their heels saying, I don't need it. I'll never have it. You know what? You might not need it, but why wouldn't we make your life easier?
Right.
You know, when cell phones first came out, people were like, I don't need a cell phone. Now we can't live without them. And there's still people that dig in and they don't need a cell phone. And sure, you can live, but why? You know, like, if you don't have to, let's make your life easier so that you're opening it up. We all complain we don't have enough time. We don't have enough time for family. We don't have enough time for exercise. We don't have enough time to do all that stuff. So there's products out there that make your life easier. Why wouldn't you take them?
Fantastic. Rhonda, if listeners are interested in learning more about you or seeking out your book, where should they turn?
Well, for the book, it's easy. Just go to Amazon, and it's Alexa is Stealing Your Job, and you'll find her all over the place. And so the book is being released in hard copy on November 5th. It's already available on Kindle. You can get it immediately. Both are at a really decent price, too, and very easy to read and get. To me, just Google my name, Rhonda Scarf, both with an H, R-H-O-N-D-A, and Scarf, S-C-H-A-R-F, and you'll find me all over the place, happy to answer questions, happy to help people get over that hump and recognize that the future looks very bright.
Well, Rhonda, thank you so much for spending some time with us today, and we hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Well, that wraps up our interview with Rhonda Scarf. As she noted, if you're interested in learning more about her endeavors, you can visit www.ontherighttrack.com, and that's with hyphens between every word, so that's on-the-right-track.com. Be sure to bookmark our podcast landing page and check back on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever it is you pull your podcast from for future episodes. And remember, if you can't fix it with your brain, you can always rely on a swift kick. We'll see you next time.